the actual value of that monthly retired pay, that pension part of your blended retirement system, is between $750,000 and $1.2 million for the average retiree. If you stay in longer, if you stay in for 25, 30 years, the value just goes up because the amount of money you get goes up. And so then you have to ask yourself, okay, well, how hard is it to get that amount of money? And again, we're just going with two simple examples. And if you're an enlisted, you have a 20-year enlisted career, and you're joining up right now, and you're like, you know what? I want to have that $750K in 20 years from now. You would have to save $1,260 every month. Welcome to Service and Wealth, the podcast dedicated to helping military personnel master their finances and achieve financial freedom. Our mission is to guide you through the ins and outs of planning, saving, and investing, and most importantly, how to balance savings so you can enjoy life now and retire with confidence. Let's go. We are back at it again. Here it's a Sunday night, end of September. We're officially going into fall, and that's awesome. I think I've mentioned it before that fall's the best time of the year, and the weather's great. Football's back on. World Series is coming around. I personally am a huge Premier League fan of like real football or like football outside of America. Debate that how you want. But, you know, the Premier League is back in full swing. We've got, like, qualifying rounds for the UEFA Cup next year. And so, you know, right now it's just, like, the weather's great. You're outside. Leaves are turning. On the weekends you can sit inside while it's rainy or chilly out and watch your favorite sport. And, you know, there's tons of cool events and festivals, like, and not this weekend, but the following weekend we're going to go to like an apple fair out in the country, and there's going to be, you know, apple pie and apple donuts and apple cider. And the weekend after that, we're going to a pumpkin patch with a maze, like cornfield maze, like just all this cool stuff that you do. And, you know, if you're like me, there's a mix of just like pure delight in watching my daughter experience these new things and run around and have fun and play. And then there's also the joy that I have because I never really grew up, not at least, you know, in my heart and soul. You know, a great example of that was just the other weekend, the whole family went to the Duxford Air Show, Imperial War Museum. It's in England. And every year in September, they commemorate the Battle of Britain. And if you're not a military history buff, that's okay. But the Battle of Britain was essentially like a six-month air campaign between the German Luftwaffe and England's Royal Air Force, as well as like the Royal Australian Air Force. And then you had Canadians, Polish squadrons. You had Americans who, and this was in this was before America was in the war, right? So this is kind of like there was basically like expats, you know, like Americans who are like, I don't want to wait for the war. I'm going to go over there. And England needed pilots, right? So they had a place to in the fight. And, you know, this, so at this air show, they've got all these aircraft that are like legitimately 80 years old from World War II that are flying, and they're simulating dogfighting and stuff. And, you know, I don't think I stopped smiling all day. And I was like, I'm going to do that when I grow up. I want to be a fighter pilot, right? And I'm like, wait a second, your career's past, dude. Like, you're past the military, but you're not past dreaming, and you're not past having ambitions and still trying to, like, you know, craft the life that you want to live. And that's really what it, you know, comes down to. And whenever we talk about money here on the Military Wealth Coach and the Service and Wealth podcast and in our blog and everything, you know, not ever once is it, like, just a trying to have more money. You know, like, there's no status that comes from that. You could, you know, you could be like a an E5 in the Space Force. And oh my goodness, I have to apologize to anyone and everyone in the Space Force, because I just realized that, like, you guys are an actual branch of the military. I think I've even seen someone in the Space Force. I've never talked to them. you make whatever jokes you want about a Marine and a spaceman. I don't know what you call a Space Force guy, girl, person, babe. Anyway, I'm making reference to, like, people in the military and the branches, I forget Space Force every time. And it just, don't take it personally. It's just, it's new, and I'm, you know, technically I'm old breed now. You know, I'm an old guy. So anyway, apologies to the Space Force, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where we're going with that. You know, the point is that you're not just trying to, like, get a whole bunch of money to have status and hold it over your colleagues, friends, like other people in the squadron or the company or whatever. You know, like, I was thinking an E5 in the Space Force might be like a social media marketing genius and have, you know, Chat GPT connected to some bots on the side, and they make like $10,000 a week, like helping people with their Instagram and TikTok accounts, right? And like, they're independently wealthy, but they still want to serve, right? And they're still trying to make all that extra money because there is a lifestyle full of experiences and things that they eventually want to have, or they want to have right now. And so that's why we always talk about affording your dream life. And the dream life is the experiences that you want to have, the things you want to do, what your day-to-day should look like, what your family wants to do, the things you want for your kids. And you can put any price on that. You know, if you're committed to sort of like a monastic or ascetic lifestyle, and your plan is to, and I know one person who actually this was their plan, and they pulled it off and they carried it out. They served 20 years in the military, in the Marine Corps, and they got out and they had rental real estate that was paying income on top of their pension they were getting, but they bought a really sick van, and they just, you know, they put a lot of money into it, and they just spent the next several years just driving around the country, living out of their van and experiencing every national park and every scenic byway and, you know, like ski resorts and like all that cool stuff. And that's what they wanted. And for that lifestyle, they had pretty much the financial freedom that they needed between their military pension and their rental real estate income. If you had a vision of, I want to have, you know, a big house back home in Texas where I grew up, but I also want to have my own, you know, ski lodge condo up in Utah because I love to snowboard, and so I want to be able to own that. And oh, by the way, like, as much as I love Texas, there's no beaches where I'm from up by Lubbock, you know, or whatever. And so you also want to have a beach, you know, beach house on stilts down there in like Galveston or out in Florida. Probably, you know, if you're looking at the weather, the national weather right now, could be a bit dicey to be in Florida and have a beachfront house. But you know, if those are the things that you want for this lifestyle, where you can be sort of settled but have vacation homes and go do cool stuff, and you want to have six kids and send them all to college, you're going to need a lot more than the person who needs a van. And so, you know, we always start at saying you need $2.5 million minimum to in your TSP when you are in your 60s in order to afford a retirement, because you're going to live for 30 or 40 years. Inflation by that time is going to make everything two or three times more expensive than it is today. And so, you know, your pension's not going to go up that fast. Social Security is actually going to go down because the trust fund is empty. And they've already told us that by 2035, they're going to have to cut every new retiree's benefits by at least one third. So that's on paper. And unless, you know, one of the next two or three presidents comes along and doubles the Social Security tax on every paycheck, like, you know, that's just reality. So by the time we're in our 60s, we're going to need a whole heck of a lot more money, at least $2.5 million. Grant Cardone, you know, he makes a lot of money by saying wild things. And, you know, he said, like, everybody needs $5 million. But he's also said, like, I'd be embarrassed if I made less than 400,000. So he's not really in touch with reality, right? Susie Orman, I think, has said, you know, the only way you can ever retire in this country is if you have, like, I want to say she said 30 million, but maybe it was like 13. It doesn't matter. She was saying eight figures, but that's absurd, right? Because that supports spending over $500,000 a year forever. So, like, you know, that's not really in touch with reality. When you really back down the numbers and do all the math, $2.5 million below that, and you're going to be living at or below the average cost of living for a retiree, right? And so if you want to have anything above like a middle-class lifestyle in retirement, if you want to have the extra cash to keep paying your property taxes so you can keep your house, your forever home that you plan to live the rest of your days in, instead of having to sell it and go move into an assisted living facility or just rent, or, you know, maybe even move in with your children, because property taxes are going to go up too. It's not just inflation, you know, taxes are going to go up. And so you always need to plan aggressively and have more than like that sort of bare minimum. And so, you know, we talk about 2.5 million and we say that that's the goal, but it could be more or less based on you. And you really, that's why we, you know, also have created and we're over the course of October's podcast, we're going to talk more about our iCash budgeting system. And the iCash budgeting system starts with an I, and it's not like iPhone or iMac, but it's I for identify goals and dreams. And essentially what it starts with is just describe the life that you want to have someday and then figure out how much you're going to have to save and invest to afford it. And the answer is definitely not zero. You know, we've talked a little bit about the average in a couple different places. We talked about the average household savings rate in the U.S., which is, you know, at 3.8%, I believe, is the 2023-2024 numbers. And when the average household is spending about $87,000, saving 3.8% means they're saving a little over $3,300 a year. Not even, you know, that's like $275 a month that they're putting away into savings. And, you know, the reality is if you're putting only that much away in savings, you're going to work for 40 years and you're not even going to make it to $1 million. And that's why there's a retirement crisis in this country. And if you strip away Social Security, you know, benefits, drop that down by a third, they're already fairly scant. You know, the average married couple only gets $35,000 a year, while the average cost of living in retirement is $50,000. So it's already less than you need to live. It's barely above the poverty line. And if it gets cut 30%, like, it's poverty level living, right? So that's why we say start with identifying the dreams that you have, paint that, you know, describe, write down the dream life you want to have, and not just in retirement, but between now and then. And then we'll put costs on it. We'll calculate the cost of those things, show you how much you need to save and where to save it. And you can start building up this personal financial plan, this personal wealth, what could even be generational wealth, you know, where you have so much that it pays for your life, but you're able to leave some for your kids and help them get a head start on, you know, getting into their life and raising their own families. So there's a whole range of things that you can target. And in the military, a lot of times we tend to be a little defeatist because we say, well, I can't really afford that. I don't make enough. Look at how much base pay is. And today I wanted to come around and just kind of talk about what the actual value of compensation is in the military and talk about, so it's a little bit finance in the news, right? Because we really need to be paying attention right now for the next month or two to what Congress is doing, specifically the Senate, which we'll talk about here in a second. So there's a little bit of finance in the news as well, because there are some pretty interesting things going on. They still haven't, you know, locked in the 2025 pay raise and cost of living adjustments. And then there's also just sort of like general life knowledge that we're going to hit today, because we're going to talk about, you know, you're here in uniform and you're looking at your leave and earnings statement, your LES, you're looking at the deposits you're getting, direct deposits you're getting on the 1st and the 15th, and you're looking at the base pay tables, and you're constantly thinking, man, you know, military pay sucks. You know, as we always joke, like, all this and a paycheck, being very sarcastic, like, I'm not really getting paid that much, and it wasn't actually that fun to spend 32 days, you know, living in my tank in the desert when it's 110 degrees every day. But it actually, when you start to back off and you frame it within a couple different levels, the first being the cost of living for a civilian, and then the second being the added value of the blended retirement system and the military pension, we want to take a different look at how much you're actually being compensated. So with that, now there's not really going to be, I'm not really going to, you know, be telling anybody how much to save or where they should be investing money in this episode. So it's not really necessary to give any sort of disclaimers, but nonetheless, out of trying to build good habits, right? Like, just remember that the content of this show is educational. It's not to be misinterpreted as actual financial, tax, or legal advice. And if you have questions and you want to seek, you know, a higher level professional advice, like, go find one. And finally, every investment decision comes with risk. Do your own research, make your own decisions, and then own the consequences. So let's start just by looking at how much we actually get paid. And the reason why I'm saying it that way is because it's also brings a little bit of finance in the news into focus. And I think that's an important thing to talk about as well. Like I said, you know, it's an election year, and so all bets are off. But one thing that you can almost count on for sure is that there's going to be some political pandering, which just means, like, essentially, another way of saying, like, populism. Like, the politicians are going to come up with proposals and new rules and, you know, other sorts of bills and legislation that helps out certain groups of people and makes them more likely to support whoever came up with the idea. And so a lot of times what happens is you get these headlines about, like, President so-and-so or Congress will, you know, do this, that, or the other thing, and nothing's changed, right? 2024, it's a big election year, and so you have some, this started in the House of Representatives, which, not to go too far into civics, right, but in our government, we have the president, who's the executive, we have the Supreme Court, which is the judicial, and then within the legislative branch, we have the House of Representatives, which is smaller and has like 435, I believe, still representatives. And then you have the Senate, which has 100, two from each state, right? And it's a little bit higher up in terms of the status or ranking. And this all has roots back in good old, merry old England. And if you were a lord or a baron, you'd be in the higher, you know, the House of Lords. And then if you were just some lowly House of Representatives, like U.S. equivalent, you were the House of Commons over here, and it had everything to do with how much money you had, and kind of still does in America too. But, you know, House of Representatives, it's kind of like a knife fight, and it's super local. And so there's some representatives who their districts have a lot of military, you know, installations and families. And so what they did this year back in June is they wrote into a new bill, the National Defense Authorization Act. First of all, they changed the name. So the name is Service Member Quality of Life Improvement and National Defense Authorization Act, right? And so you should immediately know, like, this is something's fishy. But then what they wrote into it was a 15% pay raise for all junior service members. So that's, you know, E1, E2, E3, and in this case, E4 and E5, I believe, would get this 15% pay raise. In the Marine Corps, junior was E3 and below, but I'm looking at this, I'm looking at their bill and the details of it, and it looks like it's E5 and below, they want to give them a 15% pay raise. Now, before we get all excited, again, not to get too far into civics, right? But just because the House of Representatives passed this bill, it would still have to be passed by the Senate, and then the president would still have to sign it into law. And at that point, then, you know, it's barring any sort of like legal challenge, like then you can count on it. And right now it's only the House of Representatives. And we're coming close to like, I think Senate's at the back from their summer recess, but we're coming into major campaigning and a presidential election, right? So who's really paying attention? But anyway, you know, if you got that, that would be a really substantial raise. And in this chart, what they show is that whereas like an E1 who has less than 2 years of service in 2024 was making $2,108 per month, that would go all the way up to $2,424. So it would be an extra $316 every month, which is a pretty good deal. Yeah. No, I think it is. I think it is just E3 and below, which is fine. But either way, essentially, all the junior enlisted would be getting an extra $300 to $400 per month. You know, and if you take that and you spend it, like, shame on you. But if you manage to save and invest it over the course of 40 years, you'll have $1 million, right? So that could be like your little side hustle IRA savings plan to have even more money in retirement, which is great. Or you could put it into a high yield savings account for the next 4 years, and you're going to come out of your single contract with about 15K in cash, if not more, 15 to 20K. And that can be great for going out and using the VA loan to buy a zero down home, or to buy, you know, a nicer vehicle once you get out, and just kind of, or it could just be like a good emergency savings fund to help you make that transition so that you're not having to move back in with your parents in the basement and like use your credit card and go into debt for everything. So it'd be a big difference. Now, like I said, we can't get too excited because there's also a law already that says that the military's base pay has to go up each year according to the employment cost index. And that just came out. I think it just came out. It should have just come out, but I believe it was 4.5%. And so what you really could plan on is a 4.5% raise. And what does that mean? Well, you know, if you look at like a, you know, an E5 who's getting a 4.5% pay raise, they're probably going to get an extra $200 a month. If you're going to look at an O1, for example, you know, that they could be getting an extra $200 a month. An O4 might be getting an extra $300 a month. So it's not insignificant, right? But for the most part, it's just meant to help you keep up with inflation and the cost of living changes. And so that's, we have this finance in the news, this headlines to pay attention to and see what's actually going to happen with Congress, with the president, and our pay for, you know, our base pay raises, and as well as, you know, basic allowance for housing and cost overseas living adjustments and all those other entitlements and how much they'll go up in 2025. Well, one thing that we should pay attention to, and this is now going into a little bit more of that first level of comparing military compensation with civilian compensation, is looking at the historical average increase in pay for the American worker, which since 1900, so well over 100 years, has been about 2.6% per year, right? And right here, what we're looking at a minimum in the military, we're going to get 4.5%. So because the government has said that they have this obligation to pay more based on cost of living going up, they use the employment cost index, which isn't, it's usually less than inflation, but nonetheless, there's an index for your pay as a military employee. And out in the civilian world, like, it's just, does your boss think you deserve it? Can your boss afford it? Was there a bad year for the company? Maybe everybody's got to take a little pay cut. And in fact, if we look at the, you know, average annual the average annual earnings in a household in the U.S., you know, it was right around $74,000 a year in like 2021. It popped up to like $80,000 a year in 2022 because people were still getting like a bunch of like COVID stuff. And then for 2023, the average household income went down to like $76,800, right? So you could even see like a little bit of a cut in your wages if you're out there in the civilian world. So one of the things that you can kind of chalk up as a plus of being in the military is that you've got stable income, you've got steady wages. They're going to go up each year to help you keep up or maybe even get ahead on the cost of living. And so long as you're doing your job and you reenlist or you are career designated or retained, depending on how your service calls it, you don't have to worry about like getting laid off, which is all really nice. And if we're honest, the instability that comes from possibly getting laid off totally changes all of your numbers for like what you need in emergency savings. Like that's, if you're a civilian out there, or if you're getting close to transitioning out of the military and you're going to go get a job from another firm where you could be laid off, like that's when that conventional wisdom of having 6 months of expenses in an emergency savings fund comes into play, right? And that's why we say here in the military wealth coach, we're like, that doesn't apply to you when you're in uniform because you're not going to get laid off. You're always going to get paid. The military is not going to go out of business and you're going to show up on Monday with the doors locked, right? Like, so you don't need to have that 6 month sort of emergency net, right? But it would go up if you're a civilian. So that's another advantage of the military is not only do you have this steady paycheck with like guaranteed raises every year, but you don't need to set aside as much as a civilian would in the event that you could, you know, lose your job. I mean, think about how disastrous and how expensive it is if you were just unemployed for 6 months. You know, an E2 who's unemployed for 6 months, okay, so, you know, maybe that's going to cost you like $15,000 that you're losing. Whereas, you know, an O3 who's unemployed for 6 months, now we're talking about like $40,000, $50,000 in lost income, right? So it's quite expensive to have a civilian career and have that risk of being unemployed and not making any money hanging over you. But okay, so you know, now we're gonna take a little bit more, take our comparison a little bit further. And like we said, the average household income was about $76,000 a year in 2023 for the U.S. And that's, you know, that's higher than what people actually are making. And the tendency can, because it's all, you know, this is just data and statistics out there. So you see, what's average income? What's average household income in America? And you see 76,000. And then you pull up the active duty pay tables. And if you do some quick math, you know, 76,000 is, that's about $6,200 a month. And so if you're in the military and you're looking at that, you're like, man, until I'm like an E8 over 16 years, or until I am, I guess basically like an O3 at any point, like I'm below average. I'm not making as much. But that's not quite right, because the average income per person in the U.S. in 2023 was $48,000, right? So if you're just a household of one, you know, any sergeant who's got 8 years in, or sorry, E5, right? Because we're not all sergeants. So any E5 with 8 years in is making 48K, right? They're making the average amount. And if you think about it, it's pretty impressive, because an E5 with 8 years in is probably like 27 years old. Whereas the average American worker is like in their 40s, right? Because people are working in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. So you're actually doing pretty well. You're pretty ahead of the curve just in that sort of pay. But it gets a little bit better when you start to figure out the cash value, the other benefits that you get. So we can start with, and we can say, well, if you're in the barracks, then we compare a single 25-year-old American in 2023 spent $15,000 a year in rent and utilities and food. But you get food, rent, utilities for free. So you can almost add that in. $15,000 a year. Now, if you're on the outside and you are working and you buy healthcare through your employer, a single person in 2023 had to spend $8,435. Call it $8,400. We can even like be conservative. We'll just say $8,000, right? So between what you're getting subsidized because you have free TRICARE, and say what you want about it, but I can tell you it's not a whole lot better on the outside. I've got plenty of friends and have tried to get medical care myself, and it's equally frustrating, right? But you can say there's $23,000 worth of value for an average enlisted service member in the barracks. And that's $15,000 a year for room and board and $8,000 that you're saving in healthcare costs. Well, if we take that, right, then you only need to make $25,000 base, which is basically everybody, right? Like an E1 is making $2,100, which is $25,000 a year. So when you add it all up, when you join the military and you come in as an E1, the cash value of your total compensation package, which is free room and board, free healthcare, plus $25,000 a year, you are already equal to the average American worker who's working, you know, they're making $48,000, but then after that they have to spend all them. They have all the expenses for rent, utilities, phone bills. Well, I guess we shouldn't say phone bills because everybody's got phone bills, but utilities, rent, food. And you can argue all you want and be like, well, food's not that good at the dining facility, so I actually spend, you know, a couple $100 a month on my own food. And sure, that's your choice, but you don't have to because you do get free food anyway. So really everybody in the military kind of comes in and they're total cash value, their compensation is at least as good as the average American. And for an O1 who comes in and for 2025, they'd be looking at making basically $4,000 a month base pay. You know, they're still going to get the advantage. So that's right there. That's $48,000, right? So they're starting out with the average salary. They don't have to start, you know, down at $20,000 a year and work their way up. And they're still getting that $8,000 value and subsidy for healthcare, but they're also getting basic allowance for housing. And the average payout in 2023 was $25,000. And so even if you're single and you're, you know, in Jacksonville, North Carolina, or Jacksonville, Florida, or Fayetteville, North Carolina, or any of those places where maybe the actual benefit you get is more like $15,000 to $18,000, that's putting you up at near $70,000, $70,000, $75,000. Like you're essentially making as much as the average household does as a brand new O1 in the military. So we have really good compensation. And, you know, I used to, when I commissioned into the Marine Corps, I took a huge pay cut off of my civilian salary from when I was in New York and working in finance and banking. And I used to focus on that a lot. But even though I had to downgrade my lifestyle, it wasn't just because of the, or I should say, I didn't have to downgrade my lifestyle as much as I would have because I didn't have some of the costs that I previously had, right? So even if I was making a lot of money, I was also spending a lot of money on healthcare, spending a lot on housing, and now here I'm, you know, in the desert, Southern California, living fairly cheaply. So, you know, Manhattan, way more expensive than 29 Palms or Fort Irwin or anything like that. And then another way to look at it is that the value of some of your benefits, like the VA loan available to you. You know, right now in America with the average, so the average starter home is about $200,000, which means the average family is going to need to save up at least $40K for a down payment, plus probably another $5 to $10K for closing costs. And if you're only making $76K a year and you're only saving $3,300 a year, you're talking about like having to save for like 12 or 13 years just to buy a house. Whereas because you have the VA loan, you can essentially buy a house the first year that you're in uniform because you don't have to have the down payment. And you can, if you buy the right house where the appraised value is higher than the sale price, then your lender will take your closing costs and they'll put them on the loan. Now, I don't recommend that strategy because now you owe more money than the house is worth. But the point is just to make that not only in your sort of total compensation cash value throughout the year, are you doing really well on a military paycheck with BAH, with or free housing, with free healthcare. You also have a much lower barrier to becoming a property owner and a homeowner, which means you don't have to save as much for that. And if you don't have to save $2,000 a month so that you can buy a house in the next 3 years, you can take that $2,000 and you can put it to work saving for other things. You can save it for investing, right? Investing towards an early retirement. You can save it to replace a car. You can save it to help your kids with college or just, you know, give them some sort of inheritance or trust account so that they can start their life and without going into deep debt from credit cards and student loans and all that other kind of stuff, right? So there's a lot of flexibility in cash flow that comes from access to the VA loan and being able to get a house for $0 down. That also advantages you. And then the third way that we really want to kind of look at this and compare things is what ties it back into this month's theme, which has been the blended retirement system. And this is something that is, it's kind of embarrassing for me, right? Because I've always really kind of taken pride in being detail-oriented and doing the numbers, and I've always loved Excel, and then when Google Sheets came out, I loved Google Sheets more than Google than Microsoft Excel, and it was an easy breakup, you know, like there's no hard feelings. But anytime you can put numbers, make charts, and compare things, like get an answer. Like I said in previous episodes, like when it comes to financial planning and retirement planning and saving and investing, it's just math, and math has correct answers. It's not like we're sitting in history class or we're reading, you know, some Shakespearean play and debating like what is meant by all that stuff. Finance, economics, and math, it's simple. It's like if A plus B equals C and you need C, then just do A plus B, right? Like, you know, if you already have A, then just do B. You know, like it's a simple formula. And so the reason why this is embarrassing is for like the first 10 years that I was in the military, and I, you know, every week someone's like, hey, so what's your plan? I'm like, I'm getting out tomorrow, you know, like I'm dropping papers next week, man. Even if I was, you know, at one point I was on an 8-year service obligation for a thing we don't need to go into, but even then I was like, I'm getting out in July. People look at me like, well, you don't know what you're talking about. And frankly, people would even say, some of the older mentors I had would say like, well, have you thought about just making it a career? Like, okay, now that you're halfway, now that you're 2/3 of the way there, have you ever thought about making it a career? And, you know, they specifically reference the pension and say like, well, don't you think it's worth it just to stick it out? You know, and I was always like, no way am I doing that. But I didn't really ever do the math. And shame on me for that. But what I thought as I was going through this month of talking about the BRS and talking about TSP and talking about how much you need to save, et cetera, I realized like, you know, probably most people don't do the math because they don't necessarily know how to. And so it would be useful to throw out there in an episode this month the math and not actually go through it step by step, but to just talk about it. And the reason is that under the blended retirement system, of course, you're getting and we talked about it last week, you know, when you're getting this 5% matching over the course of a 20-year enlisted career, you're getting about $48,000 of bonus cash. An officer is getting about $88,000 in bonus cash. And if that's been invested in compounding for 20 years, you know, you're already talking about anywhere from $150,000 to $200,000 in extra cash value. You know, as we're going to talk about in the following episode, when we talk about the lump sum option, when you retire, you can trade in a little bit of your monthly pension, your monthly retired pay, and get these lump sums. And those lump sums, if invested, you can get you can take a $100,000 lump sum and invest it. And by the time you hit retirement age, like in your 60s, you'll have over $1 million. And so you've already got these things that are great compensation, but this military retired pay, AKA the pension, is kind of undersold in terms of like what it actually means financially to your compensation. And so, you know, just what we wanted to do is take two different examples. And we took the example of an E8 retiring at 20 years, who's going to get about a $2,500 a month retired pay pension for the rest of their life. And an O5, who retires at 20 years, in which case they'd be counting on $4,000 a month in military retired pay. So we have these two different pensions. We've got the enlisted one, $2,500 a month, which is $30,000 a year. And we've got the officer who's got, $4,000 a month or $48,000 per year. And then what we need to do is we need to say, like, what is the actual value of that in terms of how much money you would need to save up by the age you retire in order to have that same amount of income from your investments. And for the enlisted, enlisted at age 20 and they retire at age 40, by age 40, they would need to have $745,000 saved up in a brokerage account or an investment account in order to get that $2,500 a month every month for the rest of their lives. And that officer would need to have $1.2 million saved up. If they commissioned at 23 and they retired at 43, by that time, they would need $1.2 million in a brokerage in order to withdraw $4,000 a month for the rest of their lives. And so what you can say right on top of things is the actual value of that monthly retired pay, that pension part of your blended retirement system, is between $750,000 and $1.2 million for the average retiree. If you stay in longer, if you stay in for 25, 30 years, the value just goes up because the amount of money you get goes up. And so then you have to ask yourself, okay, well, how hard is it to get that amount of money? And again, we're just going with two simple examples. And if you're an enlisted, you have a 20-year enlisted career, and you're joining up right now, and you're like, you know what? I want to have that $750,000 in 20 years from now. You would have to save $1,260 every month, which I just want to point out, that is 60% of base pay for an E1. You would have to save 60% and invest it. And you have to do that every month, $1,260 a month for the next 240 months. And then when on your 40th birthday, you open up your E-Trade or your Fidelity or your Vanguard account, and you see, okay, I have $747,000, $750,000 in there. And you could then take that and you could buy an annuity, or you could put it into a conservatively balanced, you know, dividend paying portfolio, and you could pull out $2,500 a month. And so I would like to suggest that if you're looking at you're enlisted and you're looking at the military pay chart and you're thinking, oh, I don't really get that much, maybe I should get out. Just add $1,260 to base pay. So if I'm an E1 and I'm getting $2,100, I should actually be thinking about it as like, if I work 20 years here in the military, that's not $2,100 a month I'm getting, because they're actually, on my behalf, the military is setting aside or saving $1,260 a month. I'm really getting more like $3,200 a month. I just have to wait 20 years to get that other, third of my paycheck in the form of income for life. And obviously for the officer, it's an even bigger number because they're trying to get to 1.2 million by the age of, within 20 years by the time they retire. And they're going to have to save just over $2,000 a month, right? And so another way to think about that is if you wanted to, you know, you commission and you do your 4 years and you're like, well, I'm going to get out and I'm going to go do something else now because I'm going to make more money. In order to, as far as your lifetime earnings, in order to make up that difference of giving up the military, monthly retired pay, that pension, as soon as you get out, you're going to have to save $24,000 a year into a brokerage for the next 20 years. So at a very minimum now, when you're looking at that decision, you're like, well, I have to increase my annual savings by $24,000 per month. So my new salary, my new job should be at least $24,000 more per year. I'm sorry, not 24K per 2K per month or 24 per year. Has to be, at least $24,000 more because I need to save that. And if I'm single, I also have that additional $8,500 cost for health insurance in my new civilian career. If I have a family, that, the average cost of a family's health insurance in 2023 in the U.S. was $24,000, basically, like plus or minus a few bucks. So a service member who's got a family of four, if they want to leave the service, an officer's leaving, that officer is going to need to look at a way that they can make at least $50,000 a year more in order to save and invest to offset the pension that they're not going to get and also to cover health insurance. And if you're enlisted, the number's not quite as high. It's about $15,000 a year that you need to make up for the lost pension, but then also again the 24K for health insurance. So again, we're talking like 40 to 50K is really the step up in salary that you need for lifetime value and lifetime earnings. And when you put that perspective onto it, and this is, again, I'm telling you this from somebody who was very anti for, the first decade I was in and very skeptical for the next several years. And eventually was, I basically got to the point where I was like, I think it's probably dumb to leave this on the table. Like, we should probably not just, emotionally throw in the towel and resign and go do something else because, okay, you were making 90K base pay and you could go, as a civilian, you could go make 125. And that seems nice, but when you give up the value of the pension and you give up the value of the free healthcare, it's quite a bit big hit on an annual basis. And so I felt like it was worth, as we were talking about the BRS, to take a little bit of a detour instead of talking specific BRS programs and benefits and how to take advantage of them, but to also just talk about what is the actual value of it. And next week, we're going to talk more about the lump sum and specifically how if you take it and invest it, you can double your money overnight, right? So it's got a super high, what would be called internal rate of return, and adds a lot of value. And you can do BRS calculators. And, BRS calculators will show you that the lifetime value of just the pension alone is anywhere from, $1 to $1.5 million in total earnings, if assuming you live for at least 40 years after you retire from the military. But then you also have this additional wealth that you can make through the lump sum option. And I wanted to translate that because, again, when you're 25 or 30 and you're thinking ahead to like being in your 50s or 60s and do you want a pension or not, that's way, way out of this, realm of what you can comprehend. So you kind of undervalue the monthly pension part of your BRS. And I felt like the only way to really kind of relate to how amazing a benefit it happens to be is to say, if you were going to do it on your own, how much would it cost you? Or how much extra would you need to make in order to save that much? And as it turns out, an officer to make up for their pension, to create it for themselves without the military, would need to save $2,000 a month, and enlisted needs to save about $1,250 or $1,260 a month. And so that ends up being a super value benefit of your blended retirement system. All right, well, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Hopefully those numbers are relatable. Nothing was too complicated. I didn't try to get all really technical and tell you how I did that, how I calculated the value of an annuity or the monthly lifetime payouts and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So shouldn't have gotten too dull or geeky mathy in there. And hopefully it's enough to help you more seriously plan your own personal finances and also take a little bit deeper dive into evaluating how valuable your military career is versus how valuable an outside civilian job prospect is. You know, I'd be the first one to tell you if you're making 60K and you get a job offer from Raytheon to go make 160K, like that's going to be a good deal so long as you save it, save most of the difference, right? But for the most part, the difference between for any set of common job skills or qualifications, like the difference in pay is not that big of a jump into the private sector. I can tell you from experience. So anyway, we're gonna end the show here today and then pick it back up next week talking about the lump sum option of BRS as well as what you should do with your thrift savings plan when you finally decide to retire or separate. And that applies to 100% of people in uniform, not just the retirees, but also anyone who gets out early, because you all have the BRS and you all have the TSP and you're all going to have matching contributions that are sitting in there, and you got to do something with it. And not just the savings, but also the accounts. So check back here, you know, next week, download our next episode, or make it easy on yourself. You can go over to militarywealthcoach.com and you'll see above the cut, you'll be able to opt into our weekly newsletter, and then you'll just get delivered, you know, every Monday, a newsletter into your inbox, and it'll have a direct link to our latest podcast and our latest blog post and any other, you know, new products or announcements and updates that we have coming out. And so we'd appreciate the support there. And then, as always, if you found any value in this, please help us out by sharing it, sending it to anyone else who you know is talking about these things and thinking about these things and could benefit from improving their financial IQ. All right, thanks for joining us, and until next time, stay financially fit and mission ready.